Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
This is Radio Cycling.
This is his game, and everyone else is here by invitation only, it seems.
Another bike race, another Tadej Pogačar exhibition. First came Strade Bianche and that ludicrous 80km solo win. Next came the Volta a Catalunya, the Slovenian's first stage race of 2024.
In cycling today, Pogačar has outclassed his rivals for the Tour of Catalonia title. He won the final seventh stage in Barcelona, a fourth stage win of the week, and beats Mikel Landa in the general classification by 3 minutes.
Pogačar didn't just win one of cycling's toughest week-long stage races, he completely annihilated the opposition. There were three victories in the mountains and even a sprint victory in the centre of Barcelona. Pogačar's still only 25, but already he counts 69 victories on his palmares, including two Tour de France and five monuments. Is there anything he can't do? And is he now knocking on the door of eternal greatness?
Yeah, I guess now I arrive to this point that I really strive to be the best ever.
With just over a month to go until Pogačar takes on the Giro d'Italia for the first time, debate is now raging among cycling's conoscenti. Are we currently witnessing the most dominant bike racer in the sport's history? Is he destined to take the title of GOAT, the greatest of all time, that has belonged to Eddy Merckx for more than half a century? I'm Jeremy Whittle. Today on Radio Cycling, is Tadej Pogačar going to become the greatest road racer ever?
Yeah, for sure. I want to tick them all off. I would say that I feel the most comfortable on the bike.
Also on the show, who can stop Van der Poel at Flanders?
It's easier said than done, but he's so strong at the moment. From the moment he has a gap, I think it's almost impossible to catch him.
And as the Tour de France femme goes from strength to strength, what is happening with the British women's scene? We've got the latest. Joining me on the podcast today, after a hiatus, planting tomatoes and waxing their skis, and no, that's not a euphemism, is award-winning author Peter Cossins, and also busiest journo in cycling, Chris Marshall-Bell. Say hello, both of you.
Hello, both of you.
Hello, Jeremy and Pete. I mean, I've only been busy recently because I've essentially been on holiday for 5 weeks, but I will take the title.
It's only a joke. It's only a joke. So last week, cruising around northern Spain with white tips in his hair, dancing up and over the Pyrenean Mountains, no, not Chris Marshall-Bell, Mr. Tadej Pogačar. He was always favourite to win the Volta a Catalunya, but his margin of victory at 3.5 minutes was the biggest since, wait for it, 1983. It was quite simply an exhibition in class, dominance and panache. Now, Chris was there watching this amazing display, and according to the man himself, he's never been in better condition.
Is this the best shape you've ever been?
I think the best shape. I would say that I feel the most comfortable on the bike. I really, I made one more step on to enjoy the bike even more, and to have to go every day with a smile on the bike, because I feel good with the trainings and everything. So yeah, I'm really happy, and this is sometimes even more important than just the numbers.
Now, such form is ominous for Pogacar's rivals. This year, he will take on the Giro in May and then seek to win back the Tour de France title from his biggest rival, Jonas Vingegaard, in the summer. It's a big ask. The Giro Tour double hasn't been achieved since Marco Pantani pulled it off in 1998. Not since the Pirate, however, has it looked so possible. And both Pogacar and his UAE Team Emirates staff are both privately and publicly talking up his chances.
I think I had a rough half year last year, and to start the season like this, it's really fantastic. And this victory gives me a lot of confidence, and I can see my shape is super good, and I'm really on the good path for the Giro and Tour de France.
Pogacar's win in Spain means that he has now won three of cycling's so-called Big Seven one-week stage races: Catalunya, Paris-Nice, and Tirreno Adriatico. Asked by Chris if he is now targeting the other remaining major week-long stage races, that's the Tours of the Basque Country, Romandy and Swiss, as well as the Critérium du Dauphiné, the Slovenian confirmed that he now has his sights set on world domination.
Yeah, for sure. I want to tick them all off, but it's gonna be a long way, because with the calendars, it's quite difficult. And let's go step by step. First this one, and then we can see next year which one we can try to go for.
Not only that, he's also chasing the greatest of all time title.
Are you starting to look at your place in the history of the sport and starting to think, you know, I want to be the best ever?
Yeah, I think this year I answered this question already one time, and I guess now I arrived to this point that I really strive to be the best ever.
Do you think you will be the best ever?
Let's see. The big races are coming this year, and if everything goes as planned, I think it's possible.
Chris, you spent a few days in Pogacar's company last week, obviously. Were you in the presence of a rider who's already the best ever?
I don't think you can say he's already the best ever, but ever since, for me, his breakthrough performance wasn't actually when he won the Tour in 2020, but it was 2021, because he was so dominant. He basically had that 2-1 after 8 or 9 stages. And I recall writing then that even though he was just 21 at the time, he was going to surpass Eddie Merckx. Since then, he's been pretty extraordinary. He's won most bike races that he's turned up to. But it just looks like he's stepped up an extra level this year. And in Catalonia, there was a bit of an aura of invincibility about him. He looked a few centimetres taller. He looked more confident than ever as well. And I was speaking with Machin, who is the boss of UAE, on Sunday in Barcelona. And I asked him this question. I said, you know, is Tadej going to be the best ever? And Machin said to me, he is. He is now. and I kind of said, really? You know, he's 25, you know, he still needs to win Grand Tours. He still needs to win some bike races. But he said, you are watching the world's best bike rider ever right now. And they now have a Pogacar objective of making sure he wins every single race. You know, Machin said to me, it's really important for them now that his calendar is different every year, so that he can go through every races and just tick them off one by one. I think to be the best ever, and I do think we are watching a rider who will be the best ever. I don't think he is yet. But to be the best ever, he does have to win all of the Grand Tours. He hasn't won the Giro yet. He hasn't raced it. He hasn't won the Vuelta yet. He finished third when he was just 19. So he does need to win these Grand Tours, and he needs to win them a few times. I don't know, subscribe to this view that he has to win all of the monuments. He still hasn't won Milan-San Remo, and he's not won Paris-Roubaix. I don't think it's essential that he has to win Roubaix, for example.
I think, just following on from what Chris has said there, I mean, if you compare him to Eddie Merckx, who's obviously at the moment, certainly among male riders, is viewed outstandingly or universally as the best of all time. Whereas Merckx, he won 11 Grand Tours and 19, no fewer than 19 monuments. So, I mean, that's a hell of a lot of big races to win. I mean, over his career, Merckx won 525 races, and a lot of those were probably smaller kermesses and things. And to be fair to Pogacar, they used to race a lot of split and third stages back then, where there were a lot more little time trials and things like that, where Merckx was very dominant. So perhaps there were more races for Merckx to win. But I mean, it's still a massive gap between these two riders.
Do you think he can ever close it, Pete?
I think he can close it, definitely. Yeah, I mean, I think you're right in saying that he has to win more Grand Tours. He's got to. I mean, he doesn't have to win the Giro this year, but I mean, he'll start as the odds-on favourite, and it'll be a real surprise if he doesn't win it. He could have. I mean, if you look back to when he rode he's only ridden the Vuelta once back in 2019. It was his debut Grand Tour. He finished third, and he was. I mean, you think back to that race now. He was phenomenal in that race. He won. I witnessed it actually. A stage in Andorra that featured a dirt road and then a finish up to a ski station. Horrendous conditions, absolutely appalling. Biblical quantities of rain. He won that day. Then he won on the penultimate stage, broke away from all the favourites and won a summit finish in the Sierra de Gredo. And he looked phenomenal then. But he'll have to go back to the Vuelta and win that race as well. I mean, it isn't all about just the numbers and collecting. And then, I mean, I suppose one of the things that is already obvious about Pogacar when you compare him to Merckx is that they race in this same way of kind of taking the race by the scruff of the neck. Don't care about where they're going to break away, who they're racing against. They're just going to race it in their way and they're going to win it in their way.
It's about more than victories though, isn't it? I mean, is such domination good for the sport? The complete domination by Pogacar and Vingegaard in stage racing does run the risk, surely, of neutralising the competition, of boring people. I mean, the result is often a foregone conclusion when they race.
I wrote this week after Catalunya that Pogacar's dominance in Spain and in other races such as Strade Bianche as well, it's the enemy of entertainment. I guess it's a bit of a strong phrase, but what I was trying to get across with that piece was you can marvel and admire Pogacar, and I do. I think he's both on a sporting level, but also personally, I think he's incredibly likeable, and I think it's very hard not to like him as a person and as an athlete. But ultimately, watching Strade Bianche, I was bored. And Catalunya was over after stage two. It didn't make for great bike racing. That's not to say that I can't appreciate Pogacar's skills, because I can. But there were two really boring bike races. I was also struck last week when I was at Catalunya how defeatist, how fearful riders are of him. Let's listen actually to what George Bennett and Guillaume Martin told me when I asked him about Pogacar's dominance.
I know people hate the defeatist attitude, but the race is for second now. I mean, he's got like a 3-minute lead. Unless something happens to him, you know, if he buggers off on Pradel, people go, it's a little bit like, yeah, okay, he's gone. We didn't really care about him. We weren't trying to beat him. We're trying to beat the guy that's a minute in front of us. I mean, we didn't start the race like that. But it's just the nature of it, you know, after getting an absolute hammering for two, you know, taking 2 minutes out of us on a mountain stage and then another one, the next mountain stage, you kind of think, well, what's left, you know? It's lucky that there's also Vingegaard and there's also Remco and there's also Roglic and you know, form comes and goes. And that's also the thing about bike racing, like crazy stuff can happen, so yeah.
How do you close the gap? And not just you passing, but kind of the whole sport?
Oh, it's probably too late for me, mate, but how does it go? I don't know. I mean, everyone's doing everything they can, but at some point, someone gets ultimate genetics, you know?
Really impressive, of course. You really feel that he's there and the rest of the bench is somewhere else. So for sure I can't compete, or I don't think any rider here can compete with him.
You've been a pro now a long time. Do you remember a time when the gulf was so big between the best rider, and I guess you could say the best two riders with Jonas as well, was so big between them two and the rest?
No, sure, something happened the last 2-3 years and the gaps increased. I remember the year 2020, just after COVID, I could still compete with those guys, but then they grew up, and I guess I stayed at my level. And for you, what I've known of in my career, I did never seen something like this.
That was George Bennett and then Guillaume Martin. I think sometimes the domination of a big character is a good thing for the growth of a sport, if people find him likeable. And it's hardly a secret that Pogacar has a bigger fan base than Vingegaard, for example. But then, I mean, they're also completely different characters. And it's like comparing Bjorn Borg with John McEnroe or Max Verstappen with Lewis Hamilton. I don't think it always has to be a bad thing, but I think it can be boring for some of the audience.
Yeah, I can see that, Jeremy. I mean, I don't agree that Strade Bianchi was a boring race. I think it's one of those races that, I mean, it wasn't a great edition. It wasn't a classic edition of Strade Bianchi. But it's one of those races where anything can happen because of the nature of the course. So you keep on watching it. But Catalunya was just, it was just a cakewalk for Pogacar. I think what's interesting is if you think back to 2020 and then 2021, when he was like 20 years old, 21 years old, and talking to team managers and riders then, one of the things that a lot of them were saying was that, I mean, if you think about Thibaut Pinot and even Guillaume Martin, they were saying that these younger riders were coming through, they're kind of reaching their peak really almost instantly, as soon as they're pros, whereas these other guys have kind of gradually risen and risen, risen steadily until they're kind of in at that kind of normal time in your late 20s when you're supposed to reach your athletic peak. They reach that point. And they were saying that the likes of Pogacar wouldn't advance in that same way, that they'd come into the sport high and then they'd stay at that level. Well, that hasn't happened. Pogacar's advancing. I mean, you look at him now and you think, if he carries on like this, what's he going to be like when he's 27, 28? He really will be absolutely astonishing to watch.
Okay, Pete, it's your big moment. Hit us with Pete's Puzzle.
Jeremy, I just mentioned Thibaut Pinot, now retired for 6 months. I just want to ask, what position does he currently hold in the UCI rankings, and how many Ineos Grenadiers riders are ahead of him?
Well, I guess, what is he, 69th at the moment?
Surely not the high. I would say not the high. Obviously, he had a good Giro. I don't know why he finished in the Tour 15th. I can't imagine that high. I would say, 70. And Ineos having a terrible season. 5 riders above Ineos. That's what I'm going with.
We shall see.
Okay, so just to reiterate Pete's puzzle, what position does Thibaut Pinot, now retired for 6 months, currently hold in the UCI rankings? And how many Ineos Grenadiers are ahead of him? Radio Cycling is bringing you the latest news in partnership with Saddle Skedaddle, the leader in global road cycling holidays. With more than 30 years' experience, the team at Saddle Skedaddle use their local knowledge to create some of the world's best road cycling experiences. Now, we've just been talking about Catalunya, and Skedaddle offer a series of holidays that cover a region that's become synonymous with bike racing. These include their 10-day Bilbao to Barcelona guided ride and no fewer than 4 other holidays that give a full flavour of this region. Pete, there's something there for every kind of rider.
There is, Jeremy, and it's a great region to explore on a bike. I've done a lot of riding there. You can opt for the full-on Atlantic to Mediterranean experience with the Bilbao-Barcelona ride. And their other holidays include one for families, one on the gravel around Girona, which looks really intriguing, I have to say, and 2 more sedate touring experiences where e-bike hire is available.
Obviously, I was just in Catalunya last week, and I've lived there as well for 2 years. I've mentioned it on the pod before, they're not our sponsor, but the Café Passets in Sort, which was the start of stage 4 of Catalunya last week. Oh, it's the best restaurant in the whole of Catalunya. I even treated myself to a cheese fondue last week. I'm so posh now.
Okay, so let me just That's the cafe. The Cafe Pessets, which is P-E-S-S-E-E-T-S.
In Sort,
which is spelled as it sounds. Okay, well, I'll make a note of that. Saddle Skedaddle's expert local knowledge and curated routes ensure you experience the best that each destination has to offer. So trust the experts. Head to skedaddle.com to find your next cycling adventure. This weekend is the Tour of Flanders. There are two main stories heading into the race. Lotte Kopecky is aiming to win the women's race for a third consecutive year, while Mathieu van der Poel is also hoping to win his third title in the men's contest. Now, Kopecky has begun 2024 as strong as she was in 2023, if not stronger. She's already won three races, including Strada Bianchi, and the world champion is the overwhelming favourite for the Ronde. Van der Poel, meanwhile, instilled fear in his opposition by cruising to victory at last week's E3 Saxo Bank Classic and only just missing out on Gent-Wevelgem by the margin of Mads Pedersen's better sprint. Is there any way to stop Van der Poel at the Ronde? Cycling journalist Juliana Rice canvassed the opinion of various riders before Gent-Wevelgem last week, beginning with that race's eventual winner, Mads Pedersen.
That's difficult, but I don't know. We try every time to beat him, and we try to be there with a lot of numbers, as we were in E3, but you know, even there, we are four guys and he's still capable of beating us. And this guy is just the best cyclist, one of the best cyclists in the world, and it's not easy for us to deal with him, but we have to try to beat him somehow.
Now, of course, a few hours later, the Dane did beat him, and his little Trek team did an exceptional job of having strength in numbers. But Trek's hopes, as well as Wout van Aert's, were shattered in Wednesday's Dwars Door Vlaanderen. A high-speed crash left several classics contenders on the deck, and the toll was significant. Van Aert and Trek's Jasper Stuyven sustained broken collarbones that ended their classics campaign. Pedersen emerged without any breaks, but with his body battered and bruised. The unwitting effect of this was to make Mathieu van der Poel an even stronger favourite for Flanders. But when Juliana asked Michael Matthews and Jordi Meus how to beat van der Poel, the pair were both a little defeatist.
I don't know, to be honest. He's pretty unbeatable at the moment, so I don't exactly know.
Don't let him go alone and try to beat him in the sprint. I think it's easier said than done, but he's so strong at the moment from the moment he has a gap. I think it's almost impossible to catch him.
Beating the Dutchman in the sprint is straight out of the Pedersen playbook. But that's not the only way to better the multidiscipline star. Just ask Matteo Trentin of Tudor Cycling.
Hard to tell. I mean, at the moment he's probably the best classics rider and the most in shape. But you see, last year with UAE we could find out a tactic to beat him. Okay, we got another super strong rider with Tadej Pogacar. But yeah, I mean, if it wasn't for UAE closing on the breakaway at the end, the breakaway will reach the finish and it would be like 11th and 10th or whatever it is. So yeah, we could put him under pressure.
The problem is, Matteo, that Tadej's not there. Anyway, big thanks to our colleague Juliana Rice for those audio clips. So, Pete, Chris, Van der Poel, do you think he's unstoppable?
Just about. My money is actually on Mads Pedersen to win Flanders. I thought he might have won Milan-San Remo as well. I really think this is the year when he finally wins a monument. Now, obviously, we don't know how the effect of Wednesday's injury will affect him in Flanders, but I think Trek showed in Ghent that they can outfox him. Jonathan Milan's been a real strong surprise package for them in this Classics campaign. That said, with Van Aert now out, Van der Poel, he's got even more of an upper hand. I think he's looking his best ever. And he was amazing in the cyclocross season, and he's carried that on. And I would say there's a 70% chance that Van der Poel wins.
I guess the thing that's interesting about the crash on Wednesday and what it's done is, hopefully Mads Pedersen isn't too banged up. I mean, he managed to climb onto the team bus, apparently, after the crash. And they were kind of assessing his injuries. They don't really know how he's going to be at the weekend. But one of the things that he probably does, he probably puts more pressure on the Alpecin-De Koninck team to as Matteo Trentin pointed out, they need to control the race. They need to bring back the breakaway. They need to get Van der Poel in a position to win, because he can't do it all on his own. But if they can do that, Van der Poel has shown in recent years that he's a class apart on the final circuit in Flanders when the race reaches the Oude Quaremont and then the Paterberg. Only Tadej Pogacar has been in the same league or even actually a little bit better than Van der Poel. And if that happens, that's where he'll win it.
Each week, Cycling Weekly takes you to the heart of the cycling scene with the latest news, bike and kit reviews, fitness advice, interviews and inspiring stories from around the world. First published in 1891, Cycling Weekly has been getting people out on their bikes for over 130 years. To subscribe, go to magazinesdirect.com and search Cycling Weekly. And for breaking news, expert buying advice and so much more, go to the Cycling Weekly website at cyclingweekly.com. While the Tour de France femme hogs the headlines in France, what is happening with the British women's scene? Well, uncertainty surrounds the status of the Women's Tour of Britain, which is scheduled in only several weeks' time now. But while that lack of clarity continues, the Ford Ride London Classique on 24th to 26th of May continues to grow. This year's lineup includes world champion Lotta Kopecky, rival Charlotte Kuhl, and former world champion Lizzie Denyon. In fact, the Ford Ride London organisation wanted to add further days to the race, but the uncertainty over other races on the British scene stalled that ambition, at least for 2024. Here's Ride London technical director Kevin Nash.
To get a timeline to put an extra day into a race, we need to know sort of latest to October time. Mm. And there wasn't a clear picture of what was going to be happening with Women's Tour at that point in time. So, yeah, British Cycling, UCI, are a bit reluctant to change or add to the calendar at that point in time. And obviously we run out of runway quite soon when that announcement did come through in the end. But so the ambition is there from London Marathon Events point of view. We're a social purpose organisation, so we're there to inspire activity in all its forms. And promoting elite sport, especially women's elite sport, is really important. So the ambition there is there from London Marathon Events point of view. We've got a successful business model, and as Scott alluded to, there's stakeholders there who would welcome this event to their areas. So we've got all that lined up. It's just we've got to go through those discussions about what's happening in the future. And obviously there's not uncertainty, it's just a moving feast at the moment in terms of what's going to happen. But we're obviously in those discussions, and we look forward to a bigger, better and more sort of a comprehensive future for the UK racing scene.
That's Kevin Nash. But while the race has been stalled in its wish to expand and increase its number of days, it seems there's no stopping the continued growth and wider popularity of women's racing, at least for now. Here's Lizzie Denyon.
I think it's an unrecognisable sport if I look back at, 2012, for instance, when I stood on the podium there and I was asked in a press conference afterwards about the state of women's cycling, I would give a very different answer than I do now, where so much more professional, so many more opportunities for young women. I think if you're a young female cyclist now, then it's absolutely right to have aspirations to be a professional cyclist, because it's attainable, because there has been so many changes. And I think the Women's World Tour is in a great place. Obviously, we have to keep pushing all the time to for more changes. We can't rest yet, but I think sustainable change is important. And just the thing, simple fact, like Ride London has a Women's World Tour race. It doesn't have a men's race. They've decided to invest in the women's scene, which is really cool. I think women's cycling's in a really good place. I think because I've lived through so many changes, I'm aware of the growth in women's cycling and what it's taken to get here. And I'm, very acutely aware that we don't want to go backwards. But I think society in itself has shifted since I first started racing. So it's a collective responsibility. And I think we're at a point now where regression won't happen. I think, there's things like social media, etc. But, we're not going to go backwards because it just would be called out straight away, which is brilliant and fantastic. And in terms of responsibility for legacy, yeah, I definitely feel that. And I mean, obviously, my main focus is still trying to be the best athlete I can be. So, you know, there's time in the future to really get my teeth into something like that. But even just being a good teammate, advocating for my teammates, leading by example, are all things that I take really seriously in my position.
So while Ford Ride London Classic is set fair, there are still no details on the stage towns or routes of this year's Men's and Women's Tour of Britain. We're joined now by Cycling Weekly's Tom Thulis. Tom, this is becoming a bit of a saga. Can you update us on what you know about the latest plans, particularly for the Women's Tour of Britain?
Hi, everyone. Yeah, it's really starting to gradually take shape, I think. I mean, I know that nothing is fully signed off or released by British Cycling as things stand. But I mean, I've had whispers that the first stage of the women's tour is actually going to start in Mid Wales now and finish in Llandudno. And then we know that the second stage is going to start in a similar area before finishing in Wrexham. And I'm hearing as well that they've actually are very close to getting deals over the line for the final two stages as well. So I think we're definitely in a more promising position than we were, is where it's all gradually taking shape, I think.
I mean, we're very near the line in the sand, aren't we, surely? I mean, it sounds like it's going to come down to like almost, erecting the finish line half an hour before the riders arrive. Is that the kind of feel you're getting from the conversations you've had?
Yeah, definitely. I think like we've said before, it's a very highly pressured situation. I think BC were left with a very short time frame to turn this around, as everybody knows. So I mean, they're very much doing what they can from what I'm hearing. But yeah, I think it's exciting that it's all starting to come together. But in terms of things like sponsorship, that may well come right down to the wire. But yeah, that's kind of where we're at for now, I think.
I mean, I guess with the revelation that Ford Ride London actually wanted to add days to their race, but they weren't allowed to because of the uncertainty over the calendar in the UK. I guess there's even more pressure now on BC to actually make sure this does happen.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, like we were just hearing a moment ago, that's like you say, piled a bit more pressure onto them. But I mean, from everything that we're getting from that area now, I think they're very confident in their ability to put this on. Obviously, they've brought Rod Ellingworth on board now, who adds huge amounts of experience to that process of putting this event together. So I think the team is very much there in place to make this happen. But yeah, like you say, if for whatever reason things change and it's not able to take place, then I think there'll be a lot of questions to be asked. But no, I'm feeling very confident that they'll get both races over the line this year, actually, the more and more I'm hearing.
Okay, well it sounds like we can be reasonably optimistic now rather than cautiously optimistic, which maybe we were a couple of weeks back.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's fair to say. There were certainly suggestions, wasn't there, that things were perhaps in a more difficult shape than we're now realising. But it's very much a moving picture constantly. And like you say, I think we can certainly feel a lot more optimistic than we were. But I know that developments are continuing all the time, and I think we'll get hopefully some more updates on that, more official updates in the coming days and weeks.
Well, Tom, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, guys. Cheers.
That's Tom Thulis from Cycling Weekly, and I'm sure there'll be lots more information in the coming weeks about the exact details for the Women's Tour of Britain and also the Men's Tour of Britain. And finally, just before Pete reveals the answer to Pete's puzzle, we've got another little feature that we're adding on to Radio Cycling. We love this sport, as you've probably worked out by now, but we also think that there are ways to improve it. So welcome to Ways to Make Cycling Better. Suggestions from those inside and outside the sport on how we can improve bike racing. First up, New Zealand's George Bennett, a pro since 2011.
You put me on the spot. How to make cycling better? Okay, genuine thing, how to make cycling better. Push everything forward, the season forward, back 6 weeks. So, like, we start in, like, so we're going to have Christmas at home. Everyone, no one cares about Christmas, January. No one gives a shit. It's January, mate. We're at holiday, you know. But instead, in December now, we're training at altitude, you know, because the Down Under's rolling around. The weather's good in November, December. Let's race up to that point. Have a break over Christmas, New Year, put the feet up, start later.
So you would start Tour Down Under at the end of February, basically.
Absolutely.
So then you move the classics to May.
Yeah, perfect. A bit more wind. It's always windier in May.
I thought he was going to say something like, you know, have a better coffee in the start village, or, you know, but they've got their own coffee on the bus, of course. Not nobody gives a shit about January. Very good. Very good.
I'm in favour of it.
Yeah, I think that would work quite well. I mean, they're going to have to reorganise the calendar at some point, because climate change, I keep banging on about this, but it's going to make it inevitable in the end. So they need to start looking at it sooner or later.
Okay, so it is time for the answer to... I hope this justifies a big build-up, Pete's puzzle.
No, I do as well, actually. I have no idea what the answer is.
Yeah, let's hope it works out. So the question was, if I can remember correctly, is that what position does... Where has it gone? What position does Thibaut Pinot... Come on, Pete, you can help me out. You can tell us a question.
It was, what position does Thibaut Pinot currently hold in the UCI rankings, and how many Ineos riders are ahead of him in that ranking?
Well, I reckon...
You both suggested... I think one of you said in the 60s and the other said in the 70s.
I think he's 69th. And Chris said 78. So
yeah, and then Chris said there were five riders, Ineos riders.
Yeah, I think there's one. I think there's one Ineos rider above him.
All right. Well, I was pretty astounded when a French follower of mine on X, or Twitter as I still call it, put this up the other day. I was pretty astounded to see that Thibaut Pinot's 21st in the UCI rankings still. So he's just outside the top 20, and
he's going well. He's going really well then.
And there are zero Ineos riders ahead of him. Not one at all.
Really?
Tom Pidcock is the closest at 23rd. I mean, I don't say that to cast any aspersions on Ineos' performance at all. I'm just kind of astounded that Pinot's still that high up.
I think that's a kind of nonsense, isn't it? I mean, if you're a casual fan and you're looking at that, you'd be thinking, oh, but he retired. I thought he'd retired. So surely he should just drop out of the UCI rankings now. Shouldn't be included.
Well, yeah.
It does seem bizarre, doesn't it? A complete anomaly.
That's a way to make cycling better, Jez.
That is a way to make cycling better. Let's get George on about that. Well, thank you very much, everyone, for listening. Thanks to Pete, Chris, our producers, the Wills, and to all of our guests who've appeared on the show today. Now, as we look forward to the Tour of Flanders, we'll leave you with Tina Turner. But is she talking about Pogacar or Van der Poel? Or maybe even David Brent? Thanks for listening. See you next time. You're simply the best. Better than all the rest. Better than anyone I ever met.
Social Podcast Network.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.